Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Spicer from GameWisdom.com, and this is another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. For this week, we got a great cast planned for you. I'm going to be talking with the lead developer and owner of Twice Circle. He is currently making a game that I am very excited to keep playing, and that is Big Pharma. So, please welcome to the cast, Tim Wicksteed.
Hi there.
Hi, Tim. It's a pleasure to have you on tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah. So as I was just saying, Big Pharma has been a game that I've been playing pretty regularly since you put it into, I guess, is it considered public beta at the moment?
You know, you can call it beta or early access, you know, whatever you like, really. It's the same thing, if you ask me.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking a lot about that over the course of this episode. Mm-hmm. So, to get the ball rolling, since this is your first time on the cast, Tim, for people who haven't heard of Twice Circle or Big Pharma, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in the industry?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, my name's Tim Wicksteed, and I run a company called Twice Circle, and it's your classic indie developer setup where basically it's just me who's kind of on the payroll, and I'm the coder and the designer of all of my games. And then, but you know, I don't do everything. I work with various freelancers, artists, composers, sound engineers, and also a publisher called Positech Games. To make my games. I don't always work with Positech, but I did for Big Pharma. In terms of my history, I actually used to be a mechanical engineer. So my kind of technical training, if you like, is not in game design or even programming at all. And I did that. So I went to university and I did that for 4 years. And then I worked at an engineering consultancy for a couple of years. But this whole time, ever since I've been a teenager, I've been making games as a hobby. And it kind of got to this point when I wasn't really happy in my last job. And there was this big indie kind of indie thing happening, like, you know, indie game, the movie, etc., all that sort of stuff. This is like 3.5 years ago, maybe. And it just seemed like this. As I'm sure so many people have been in the exact same situation, it just seemed like this amazing, romantic, awesome thing to do, to quit my job, to start my own company. And that's what I did, and I took the plunge. So the first kind of year or so, I was doing a mixture of freelance and that sort of work around apps as well as games. But at the same time, I was also working on a game called Iron Age, which was my first commercial release, which released in the summer of 2012. And that wasn't a huge success. It was a free-to-play space strategy game on Android. And while I was really proud of it as a game, it wasn't a commercial success. And I identified a load of reasons for that. You know, it wasn't a commercial success because it wasn't anybody else's fault that it wasn't a commercial success. It was my fault. You know, it was certain decisions I made with the design of it, and I was determined my next game would be a little different. So I went back to the drawing board and spent a long time trying to work out what to make next, and I decided that what it should be is Big Pharma. So Big Pharma is it's a management simulation game about running your own pharmaceutical company, and sounds a little bit strange, but when you break it down, there's some really nice kind of mechanics in there. It's all about researching new machines and discovering ingredients and using those ingredients and machines in production lines to churn out drugs, which you can then sell, hopefully for a profit. And that kind of creates your little core loop, as it were. So we released that a couple of weeks ago into early access or a beta, and so far it's going really well, and I'm just continuing to work on that.
Awesome. And yeah, I've been really enjoying Big Pharma. We've been seeing almost like a little resurgence of this bullfrog style of like the management sim games. And for those of you who are listening who haven't heard of what, when we talk about bullfrog, that is referring to Bullfrog games way back in, I think, most of the 90s. So I think the first studio by Pierre Molyneux. And they create a variety of management-style games, but they had enough depth to them that you were learning, like, basic business, stuff like that, but they were very much a fantasy or abstracted setting. Two of the biggest ones would be, like, Theme Park and Theme Hospital. And probably the big one that's happening right now, besides Big Pharma, is Prison Architect by Introversion. So for you, Tim, what attracted you to this type of like management style game for Big Pharma?
Well, like you say, we are seeing a bit of a resurgence in it. I have to admit that I follow the indie scene, if you can call it that. I just follow PC games in general, in fairness. And I became aware of Prison Architect when it first went into... Did they call it Early Access? I can't remember what they called it. But, whatever they called their version of Early Access. And there was just this huge buzz around that game. Mm-hmm. And there was all these like articles about how much ridiculous amounts of money it was making. Mm-hmm. And I've got to admit, a small part of me went, huh, that's interesting. People seem to like this. And, and then I thought, why is that? And I think, yeah, for sure, there's this itch that is being scratched by a few games, but it's not being like scratched by enough games yet. Yeah. And that is this traditional, management sim game, a game where you're not killing things, but you're building up this this system which generates you money. And I think it's incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, definitely. When I spoke with, I'm going to butcher her name here, I just know mm-hmm. Carolina from Colossal Order, who mm-hmm. did City Skylines.
Oh wow, cool.
We talked about with the city builder genre, there's definitely that itch about optimizing systems, making sure everything is in its place, everything is working. I saw it's described akin to someone who enjoys a model train, setting everything up and then watching everything work in perfect harmony. And you really do get that with the city builder genre and as well as with these management style games. When you look at with Big Pharma, you're building an assembly line, so you have to have everything working in order in place. And as you're saying, Tim, there really aren't too many games that really scratch that itch, especially not just with the city building genre, but with these management style games. There was a lot of them over the last decade, but they were usually of pretty much like shovelware, really poor quality. I know there are like 27 like Prison Tycoon games. Someone made probably like a few Game Developer Tycoon. There's probably a whole lot of those. And they just never managed to break through. But now with Prison Architect and with Big Pharma, we're really starting to see a case for these games really coming back to the market.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'd like to mention a couple of other games which were huge influences for Big Pharma specifically, and those are Roller Coaster Tycoon and Transport Tycoon, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes when I talk to people about Big Pharma, I actually describe it as it's almost like, in Roller Coaster Tycoon, you've got this park, right, which is like your factory in Big Pharma, and then you've got your individual roller coasters, which you design by hand to for whatever reason, to have excitement or fear factor or whatever it was. And in a way, those production lines that you have in Big Pharma are kind of like those roller coasters in Roller Coaster Tycoon. And I think there's something really satisfying about that whole kind of, you're laying out little, bits in a row, and together they make the roller coaster / production line / if we talk about Transport Tycoon, your transport route. I mean, you mentioned model trains, and it's funny because Transport Tycoon, I still love that game, and it's kind of progression and it's kind of end game and that sort of stuff aren't fantastic by modern day standards, but it still has this amazing like thing where just building train tracks and watching trains go along them is so fun. And I was trying, hopefully I was successful, to get a little bit of that into Big Pharma.
Yeah. And one of my all time favorite games, which I don't know if this would even count as a management style game, but I have to bring up whenever I can, would be Sim Golf by Firaxis.
Oh, really?
I just love that game. I cannot play golf to save my life. I just love designing these insane golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you with Roller Coaster Tycoon. My very first, I guess, business style game would probably be Theme Park. When we started talking about games.
I played Theme Park. Yeah.
Now here's a question for you, Tim. We've been talking about this management style game. We brought up City Builders as well. And I think I just want to get your thoughts on this. would you consider it to be, I guess, the difference in design or philosophy between a management-style game like Big Pharma, Prison Architect, etc., versus a traditional or maybe not-so-traditional city builder like City Skylines, the Impression-style games, and those?
Well, I think the differences are probably quite subtle, because on the surface, they seem similar, because you have money, you can get loans, maybe, and you're using that money to invest in some kind of system which generates you revenue at the back end of it. So on that front, you know, they're very, very similar. Definitely I'd consider them the same genre. I think the main differences, and where they scratch slightly different itches, is probably in terms of the level of control and micromanagement.
Yeah.
So I think city builders are, I mean, I haven't actually played City Skylines yet. I've bought it on Steam, but I haven't played it yet. But from the way I can tell, it has a huge amount of control, but it is macro control rather than micro-based control, which is awesome, because you don't always want to be micromanaging. It's kind of awesome that, you know, that scratches a slightly different itch. You know, you lay out your zones, you build your roads, you have your kind of overall system, and then you set it going, but you're not controlling the individual people, and you're not controlling the exact buildings that pop up in each place. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Big Pharma and Prison Architect, it's this different thing where you're laying down, you know, individual components. And one of the things that was really important for me with Big Pharma was actually I wanted you to have a sense of control in your factory, a sense of ultimate mastery within your factory. The simulation is completely deterministic, so that if you set up your production line with, you know, these machines, and you watch a ingredient come out, the pill that comes out the other end will always be the same if you have the same machines in place. Can you imagine how frustrating it would be if there was like a random proc on something going wrong? You know, people suggest that. They said, what if you could have defects in your drugs and this sort of stuff? But I think, you know, it depends on what type of player you are. But personally, I want that like ultimate control.
The optimization.
Exactly right.
Yep. And regarding city builder versus management, I could have said it better myself. I was saying the exact same thing the other night with the macro versus the micro layer.
Yeah.
And you're right. With city builders like, say, Skylines, the Anno series, etc.,
yep,
they are very much macro-oriented. And you have to be, because you are managing multiple systems, multiple people. So you can't spend like 30 minutes deciding how a restaurant's going to work its food or how something else is going to do. But when you're playing these kind of management-style games, it really is about, as you said, getting down to the details, or even the micros of details, and just getting everything just as you want. And again, that optimization, I mean, I love being able to set these things up. And again, back to like the model train example, getting everything perfectly as you want, and then hopefully your plan goes right, or you screw up. Like, in one of my plays of Big Pharma, I spent like 40 minutes trying to get the shaker and the multi-mixer to create some kind of super drug of three cures. And at the end, I misread one thing by the concentration, and the whole thing just fell apart. I wasted so much money.
Oh, that's kind of awesome, though.
Yeah, I was just like, I just call it my big science experiment. I was trying to play God, and it failed spectacularly. And then the second I was able to get at least the one cure, but I was just so adamant, saying, I won't get all three of these cures working. Let's mix everything up. And I just could not get it working right.
Oh, that will come with time. I've got to admit, that's probably the most confusing mechanic. And I'm going to see if I can look. Once you get it, you get it. So it's like I think it's functional as a mechanic, but I'm just not sure if the way I teach it to the player is optimal yet. In fact, I'm certain it's not. So you know, I take a bit of responsibility for that.
Man, it definitely is an interesting mechanic, and really does feed into the optimization, which we'll talk a lot more about during this cast.
Cool.
So with the overall business management style games, before we talk a little bit more in detail about Big Pharma, I have just a few more questions for you about that.
Sure.
I would say, going back to, as you said, your inspiration from Prison Architect, was there anything that you saw when you were playing that game and looking at it that you said, you know, I gotta have this for Big Pharma? And was there anything you looked in there and you said, you know what, I won't go in a different direction than what these guys are doing?
Interesting. Well, I'll answer the second point briefly first, and I think that comes down to control, which I won't talk too much about because I've already talked about it. But in Prison Architect, you've got lots and lots of liabilities and things that are outside your control in terms of the individual actions of the little prisoners and the guards. And that's awesome for Prison Architect, but it wasn't something that I wanted in Big Pharma. I kind of wanted this ultimate control where your machines are infallible and they always do what you want them to. So that's one thing I wasn't keen on, but God, I mean, list of stuff that I am keen on. One of the reasons Prison Architect's been so popular is because it gives the player an awful lot of freedom in terms of the way they make these things. In fact, it's why a lot of management type sim games are popular. You know, and it's the reason these games are like so well trodden on streams and YouTuber videos, because compared to like a first person shooter, depends which type of first person shooter, but say it's a linear story driven first person shooter, one person's playthrough is probably going to be quite a lot like the next, whereas one person's prison is going to be nothing like another person's. So I really wanted that. So from the very beginning, I was thinking, you know, how can I kind of keep this quite open and make it so you're not just following a kind of a path every single time? And you know, that was quite a challenge, especially when you come to the kind of the cure tech trees and the research tech trees. I wanted to make sure that you weren't just playing the same game over and over and over again. Hopefully I've been successful with that. I guess things like the layout of your production line is, you know, there's micro optimizations you can do in terms of just laying it out in a little corner, or maybe you stretch it over along and next to a wall, stuff like that. You know, that's a way for a player to put their own stamp on things. Mm-hmm. Let me think if there's anything else. What else does Prison Architect do awesomely? Oh, well, of course. So I can't believe we've not mentioned it yet, but the satire element. Mm-hmm. So Prison Architect could be about holding little viruses within a networked prison within a computer chip, right? Just off the top of my head. And that would be cool, and you could have all the same mechanics and it would still work as a game. However, they didn't do that. They chose the very controversial subjects of prisons, you know, death penalty, all this sort of thing. And they use that to fuel people to in their gameplay, because there's a lot of decisions in Prison Architect which you're not told exactly what the right thing to do is, and you go, you know, I don't know, like, could I put these prisoners in kind of big lavish cells with windows, or should I put them in the minimum kind of like 2x1 or whatever it is, maybe it's 2x3 cells that the game lets me. And of course there's advantages and disadvantages to whether you treat your prisoners nice or not, and you know, whether you go maximum security or not. And what's nice is that the game never passes judgment. All it does is say, you can do these things, here are the consequences, what do you think? And I try to do the same with Big Pharma. There are a couple of little incentivized things that I actually am not sure if I want to keep. Things like, if you produce good cures, you get a bonus to the amount of money that you make. And there's an element where I think it's almost good if it's not cost effective to make good cures in certain circumstances, because I think that's an interesting thing. It's like, you know, it feels like it should be the case, but I want the player to have almost have an experience where they go, I start off making nice cures. Like, I get all the concentrations to the right level. I always get rid of side effects. And then I made no money, so I just started churning out stuff with side effects. And I think that's really interesting. That's a wonderful kind of like learning experience. You know, it's not 100% accurate, but it does make you think about the pharmaceutical industry. Like, you know, there is a price. You know, it's a business. It's not, you know, there is a price to everything. And, you know, they're probably having to make calls like this all the time. Like, is it going to be worth it to actually get rid of this minor side effect? Maybe we should just leave it in. Mm-hmm. So that's something I've definitely taken from Prison Architect. Or try to.
Yeah, and it's definitely a very interesting push and pull when you're trying to balance the cure versus the actual pay.
Yeah.
You see this, or I saw this when I was playing a few of my rounds, where some of the ingredients had like some insane like side effects. I wore like 3 different side effects on, and the way to get rid of them were like completely opposite ends of the spectrum. Like,
oh,
one was,
dear.
Like 3 concentrate, and the other one was like 17 concentrate.
Yep.
And it was just no, you mean, you could do it, but then as you're saying, it's going to cost you like several times the amount of money in order to get that.
Yep.
And then at the end of the day, is it really worth it? One question regarding this, are the ingredients set or from like a pool, or are they all randomly generated when you start a new scenario?
So the ingredients are randomly generated. The concentration is, it's actually semi-randomized for balance reasons. The actual contents of an ingredient, so, you know, the cures and the side effects, they are 100% random.
Okay.
And, but the individual cures and side effects, they are kind of, they're kind of fixed. So like, you know, a certain cure or side effect will always be active within a certain range. So a couple of kind of sub points to that. On one point, the reason you have to kind of do it like that is because, the reason I think you have to do it like that is just for balance reasons, just because it could, on certain playthroughs, you could be doing really well for half the game, and then suddenly this thing appears, and it's just ridiculously expensive to upgrade it because the cure happens to be at the other end. Maybe that's okay, but I decided to kind of keep that balance. But one of the things that is random is the max strength concentration. Is that something you encountered?
Yeah, every time you play, obviously, for those of you who haven't played, the max strength basically is the strength of whatever the cure or the side effect it is. So if you get closer to that concentrate, it's going to have a greater chance of happening. So
Absolutely.
If you have a high strength on insomnia, it means there's going to be a greater chance it's going to affect. But if you're able to do it on the low end of the scale or the lower end of that strength, it will have a less chance. And so that's a way of sort of getting around side effect without actually having to try to remove it. Or in some cases, you can remove it.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are random. And that means that actually, you know, that coupled with the fact that, you know, the actual side effects and the cures that appear in each ingredient are random, I personally find that I very rarely will make the exact same cure within two games. You know, sometimes my hypertension will be really, really good. Sometimes it starts with a side effect that I can't avoid. Mm-hmm. And if that max strength concentration happens to be right where I need to be for my hypertension cure, you know, I'm screwed and I'm not going to make hypertension medicine. So hopefully there's enough randomness to keep the game fresh while also maintaining balance.
Yeah. And that actually brings me to one question I was going to ask you, Tim. Regarding as Big Pharma gets continued and further into development, are you going to have like any sandbox or free play modes like Prison Architect, or will the game be predominantly built around these scenarios?
So I definitely want to add two modes, which are very flexible. So I wasn't sure whether to combine these or have them separate, but I think it's simpler to keep them separate. So those two modes are kind of custom game and free build. So free build will be infinite money. You'll have all of the machines, and you can just basically, and a huge map, which you can just expand into and just make whatever machines you want. Mm-hmm. Separate to that, you have the custom game, which is actually very much like the existing challenges and scenarios, except that you, as the player, get to set the simulation parameters.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be lots of flexibility there. There'll be, you know, choose the number of AIs, the AI difficulty. You could play without AIs. How harshly the market penalizes you for oversaturating it, because you could have a game where it's a much more aggressive kind of market, much smaller market is actually the way of putting it, so that if you oversaturate any particular cure, you're just massively punished with the price. That forces you to make have a much more diversified portfolio, etc. You know, research speed, the speed ingredients are unlocked. You know, these parameters, when used in tandem, could really make quite a different game, I think. You could make a much slower, methodical game if you wanted, or a much faster game where you're just kind of like getting in, creating a cure, and then getting the hell out again.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you brought up the management style or keeping track of the market. Because that's one thing that I haven't really seen like the full impact of that yet, at least in what I've been playing on Intermediate at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In like the full game or later on, how does the market trends or the consumer affect your strategy while you're playing?
That's a good question. So let me think. I think there's probably two main mechanics that matter in terms of the market. So one of those I've mentioned a couple of times, it's saturation. Mm-hmm. So basically every cure has its own saturation limit. Actually, a better way of putting it actually is every cure has its own unique number of sufferers. Okay, so the number of people who are inflicted with that particular disease or thing. So for a painkiller, that's going to be a really high number because we all take loads of those combined. But for something that helps sickle cell anemia, that's going to be much lower because that's a genetic disorder, mm-hmm. and yeah, much rarer. Now, that number basically, that the higher that number, the more you can export, the more you can sell to the market without the market becoming saturated. And once it reaches 100% saturation, the price starts to go down. And once again, the higher that number, the slower the price will go down. The lower that number of sufferers, the quicker the price will drop. So some cures are super sensitive. And, you know, if you even kind of oversaturate the market by kind of 15 or 30 treatments per month, you might knock like 25% off your price, kind of killing your margins. So I think that's one important thing. And so is the saturation, and you've got to bear in mind that you're playing against competitors. And so there's AI companies that also run pharmaceutical companies just like you do. They can move in on your cures, your products, and if you're competing for a market and you saturate it, it's a good chance you're going to make less money, both of you, you and the AI. And so there is definitely an incentive to have your own markets that you're not competing in. So the second part of the market that it's worth mentioning is curing number of sufferers. So if it depends on the cure. Painkillers, you're not curing anything. It's a repeat thing that comes and comes and comes. But some cures, it's actually, I'm going to have to choose a different word for this because it's going to get confusing. Some market needs, let's call them, can be cured permanently. And if you supply a very effective product which does permanently cure those people, that number of sufferers will permanently decrease. Now, that sounds like a really good thing, because you're helping these people, you're curing these people. But the problem with that is that reduces the market size. And if that happens for too long, then eventually your prices are going to drop. It's going to be easier to saturate the market. And actually, this is a weird thing. And I say it in the trailer because I think it's a really nice soundbite, which is, this is the only industry where illness is good for business. And it's just madness, isn't it? You know, so from the pharmaceutical company's perspective, in terms of if they're just thinking about making money, and I'm not saying that's all they think about, but if they were, it's actually a bad thing when they permanently cure someone, because they can no longer treat their chronic problem. Mm-hmm. So that's something you have to be careful with later in the game, is being too good.
And for right now in the current bill, or at least the current bill at the time of this recording, are those market pushes or the saturation limits, is that currently like affecting the game, or will that come later in future builds?
So those are currently in. Those two things that I've talked about. There's things I'd actually like to add, which maybe I'll talk to you about later in the cast, which will actually make the market simulation even more interesting. Because to be honest, I'd actually say the market simulation is probably the area which needs the most work. I really like the general kind of production line stuff. But yeah, the market simulation isn't quite dynamic enough. And actually, once you've probably outside of the first hour of each game, I'd say it becomes a little less interesting. Mm-hmm. You've still got to be careful not to oversaturate the market and not overly cure it, but it's quite easy to do that, if I'm honest. So yeah, I definitely want to add some more things, and I'll tell you some of my ideas later in the cast.
Cool. Now, going back to the assembly line, that's definitely one part that I want to spend a few minutes on with you, Tim.
Sure.
And that is, how did you come up with like the design philosophy for the assembly line? Like, how's the player going to affect these pills, affect these cures, and that type of game system?
So the one word answer is iteration. you know, it's a word that's thrown around a lot and not necessarily done enough. Mm-hmm. But it's changed so many times. My starting premise for the production line simulation was conveyor belts. because we love conveyor belts. Factorio, Infinifactory, we love conveyor belts. Yeah. And they have to be super tight. So we've got conveyor belts, and we must have splitting, and we must have merging of conveyor belts, because that's cool. Then machines. So what are machines going to do? Well, machines need to somehow improve the value of the ingredients that you put into them. But it's not just about machines. I had this idea, it has to be also about ingredients, because I knew that I had to have some kind of money sinks in the game, some things that you as the player will always want to want more of, always want to be sinking money into. And so those two things are new ingredients and new machines. So I had to come up with a system which meant that new machines would allow you to increase the value of your drugs, but also new ingredients would also let you do that. And I didn't want it to be just as simple as you get a new ingredient and then you upgrade it as far as you can go and then you sell it. I also wanted it to be that a new ingredient could allow you access with your current ingredients to a higher level drug, cure, whatever. And that's where the idea for the catalyst system came from. So without going into too much detail, the catalyst is basically a side effect that allows a upgrade reaction for one of your cures to go off. And so long story short, it's not only it's an extra thing that you have to collect by discovering new ingredients to allow you to get every single cure, but it also is a reason why you have to keep side effects around in your drugs, and that's really annoying. And basically from that, I just iterated, and the first version didn't have the concentration mechanic that we've been talking about a lot during this cast. Originally, you would always have to basically every machine you put it into basically would normally upgrade the cure to a next level. There was no concentration requirement.
Okay.
The problem with this is your production lines became very short, and actually it was very easy to fit all your production lines in a reasonably sized warehouse. So the change I made was adding this concentration mechanic. It just gave you a reason to want to build. In fact, I'm looking at a screenshot on your website right now, which has 5 dissolvers in a row. I needed a reason for you to want to build 5 dissolvers in a row. And honestly, it's hard for you to imagine it the way it used to be. There was never a need. You'd go for a dissolver, it'd either remove a side effect or upgrade a cure, and that was it. And you'd have these kind of the 4 machines in a production line would allow you to get to kind of like max level, which was just crazy. So that's why I added the concentration mechanic. But that was a huge iterative process. You know, it took so long to get to where we are now. And you know, I'm just carrying on in that same philosophy, really. I don't think anything's sacred. In fact, it's something that a friend of mine called Alan Zucconi, who's also a developer, said to me. He's really, impressed, I guess is the right word. He's impressed, like, that I just throw mechanics in the trash if I don't like them, and I just do them all over again. And it takes time. You can lose a month of development by doing that, but I'm just not going to have anything in the game that I don't think is awesome. So yeah, there were some kind of rough times during development where I just knew I have to throw this away.
And that's actually a really good topic there, Tim. It's something I talk with other game developers about, and it's definitely something that enthusiasts and students should definitely learn more about, and that is knowing when to keep fighting for something and when to just say, you know what, this isn't going to work, you know, throw in the trash, we got to start over again.
Absolutely.
It's definitely something that different developers have different takes on. When I've spoken with developers like Chris Park from Arkham Games,
oh, cool.
He talked about that challenges of essentially having a core foundation of your game, what you want your game to be, and then letting everything else flow from that. And we've also spoken about like having like harmonizing game elements. It's been a topic that's come up a lot. So for you, Tim, as you just said, you did a lot of iteration with Big Pharma. How did you know when it was time to raise a white flag and just cut a section or a mechanic from the game?
Well, I think the example I've just given is the biggest one. So I took the game to a show called EGX here in the UK, which is the biggest commercial game show. Well, maybe commercial is not the right meaning, like public facing. So it's not just for developers, it's a conference, it's for, members of the public to come and play new games. And I had the old system without the concentration mechanic, and there was loads of great feedback on the game. I could watch as people were playing that there just wasn't enough meat there. And you know, I just thought rationally, you know, how can I possibly make it so you need to have $500 in the row? And then I came, you know, I did loads of pen and paper designs. All of my design always starts on pen and paper. And I came up with this idea, which I thought thematically it worked in terms of, you know, there's, you know, the idea of kind of moving these concentrations of these ingredients up and down, these little solutions kind of works, but also mechanically it would solve that problem. And I kind of chuck out a massive chunk of code just to do that. So that's an example. I think you just know when something's not working, or it's not. Yeah, let me think. Is there any example of something which was just, oh, okay, the belt system. Oh, yes, this is a great example. Okay. I did some alpha testing just before, for about a month before releasing the beta. And you would not believe how different the belt system was. In fact, you would believe if you ever watched it. If you go back and watch any of my old vlogs, you'll see the belt system was very different in the alpha and before that. And it didn't use pathfinding, so it could only ever draw in straight lines. Mm-hmm. And it also had this weird wonky system where the belt that you laid down on a tile would depend on where your mouse was in the tile. In fact, it was ripped completely from Transport Tycoon, and it was a system I was very familiar with, but no one else was. People are used to Anno, where you just build roads and they automatically connect to the roads next door. I think it's same in kind of Prison Architect, but with belts it's a bit different because they have. You don't just like fill a square with belt. It's like you have to have the belt oriented in the right direction. You have either a corner or a straight or a T-junction. Anyway, so I took a load of alpha feedback, and it was very horrible to read. But I think 8 out of 10 people commented on they didn't like the belt tool. And that's a huge majority. You know, the last two probably thought the same but didn't mention it. If it was 50-50, there might have been some discussion. But so if you get feedback like that, which is, you know, be careful, don't listen too much to feedback. If this is my advice to any developers out there, is if you get like 20 different bits of feedback from 20 different people, that's probably those sort of things come down to preference, the sort of things they're mentioning. But if you ever get a massive correlation, if you get 3 people out of 10, or yeah, at least even just 3 people in general just mentioning the same thing, that means it's a problem. Because that's not a preference thing. That is an issue with your game. And so I completely revamped the belt tool, and it's so much better now, and I love it. And yeah, you have to not get attached to things in your game, I think, and be, you know, instead of seeing it as I'm throwing away a bit of myself, a part of something that I've worked really hard to get in, just think it's going to be so much better when I fix this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being open to that change is definitely very important as a game developer. We've seen a lot of other indie studios sometimes get into trouble when they're just so adamant about one idea, one concept, that you can't see the forest for the trees. And as you said, Tim, getting that feedback has been pivotal for a lot of game developers. It's one of the reasons why so many people have really flocked to early access, having these public betas or even public alphas in some cases.
Yeah.
Because it's just so invaluable to have all these extra eyes looking at your game.
Absolutely. I mean, let me illustrate that with a kind of little factoid, a little statistic. I think I had 3 pages. You know, I told you I'm a pen and paper kind of guy. 3 pages of bullet points, numbered things, numbered lists, saying these are the things I need to change before I release the beta. So just like every other developer out there, I got through about half of 1 page. So I had all these other things. I released the beta. I'd say 90% of the things on my list have never been mentioned by anybody in feedback. Does that mean that the game's perfect and I got no feedback? Hell no! I got so much feedback. This is wrong. You know, can you tweak this? Can you tweak this? And so the thing about feedback is basically it's hard to describe. So I didn't want to sound like a hypocrite here, because I didn't want to actually push the game out to public alpha for quite a while. I was like, oh, I know I just need to get a little bit more in before I do this. But then once you do get to that base level, then you've just got to push it out there and get feedback, because what you'll find, and certainly in my case, is 90% of the stuff you think is awful and you're worried about, and no one else minds, and they think it's fine. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's loads of stuff you're not aware of. And so, yeah, it's definitely a good idea to put it out there and get some feedback.
Yeah. And as you were just saying, you were going back and forth between deciding when to put in the public beta and when to keep it out. Gosh. What was the the boiling point? What was the pushover point that you said, okay, I gotta get this out to the public?
So I had quite a stressful kind of May and April. The list of stuff I wanted to get into the game just kept getting longer, and I originally wanted to release the game full release beginning of May 2015. And I've been pushing back my dates for beta for ages, and I just said, oh, enough is enough. I've just got to get this out. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, I was happy where I'd got to. I finally had every system, like version one, into the game, but I wanted to have a chance to kind of iterate and go over those all again and make them a little better. And like every single screen, I wanted to kind of tweak GUI and that sort of thing. But I just set this date, 4th of June. You know, that's already a month later than you expected. And I think the thing that really pushed me to do that was I was worried whether the game would be successful. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I put in over a month of my time and a lot of my publisher's money into this game. And the great thing about a beta is obviously you don't get all of your sales. You're going to get hopefully a larger proportion later when I release on Steam. Because some people just don't follow betas, early access, you know, your kind of more casual gamer won't be aware. And some people aren't willing to pay for a product that's not finished. And hey, more power to you. Like, that's totally like a personal decision, and it's up to every individual whether they want to do that. So anyway, but the what you can do get from releasing a beta or early access is you can get a vibe on how much people like your game and whether you're onto something. And the great thing is I've had such a positive response, and the game's done so well at this stage that I'm now totally dedicated to putting in another couple of months work into it to get it up to, you know, release standard. Whereas, you know, if it hadn't been as successful and people weren't really feeling it, I might have cut my losses and gone, well, you know, maybe I won't bother with these features. Because you know, at the end of the day, I'm running a business, and you got to be careful not to spend more than you take back. But so that's another reason why like you said, reached boiling point, was I had to get a read. Like, are people actually going to, you know, is the game fun? I just wanted to answer that question. I think it's quite fun.
Yeah, and deciding whether to keep working on the game and to push it out, we saw this a lot with Prison Architect, and how when they first started, I don't think they were planning on making that game for over 2 years. Feedback was incredible. Now, I mean, it's hard to even tell outside of what they've been doing, you know, what was the original plan versus what they added after the success.
I totally agree. I think the response, and, you know, both in words, both critically, the response, you know, was very positive, but also in terms of just people voting with their wallets. I mean, that game made, you know, such a serious amount of cash, well deserved, let me add. But, you know, so early, like, you know, the amount of cash that game made, like, within the first 2 months of early access was just ludicrous. And what was great about that is it gave Introversion, who, you know, Introversion, I mean, they're like indie royalty.
Yeah.
I mean, they are like the original indie studio. I know the two owners, you know, relatively personally. I've you know, had dinner with them a couple of times, and, you know, they've had tough times, I know for sure, in terms of they've been burnt by working with publishers before. And they're so strongly like in favor of being independent. So what was amazing is basically the public gamers voted with their wallets. They gave them the license to basically take their time and make the game amazing, because they have the development funds to do that. And I just think that's a wonderful thing.
Oh yeah, Introversion. I mean, we could definitely spend a good half hour. We could definitely spend half hour just talking about them and their contributions. I mean, wow, totally. I remember, you know, Darwinia, Hacker, the whole shebang with them. And one of the things, as you said, they were really one of the first indie studios. I mean, every one of their games is a completely different game.
And absolutely.
This was happening, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, back when most developers were either the AAA or the AA.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I would definitely love to talk to those guys. I know they've been keeping really quiet over the last 2.5 years working on Prison Architect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without going into too much detail, like the main kind of two owners are like busy with like kind of family life and that sort of stuff. You know, it's personal stuff, so I don't want to go into it. But like, so it's not bad for the record. But you know, they, you know, young kids and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, I think to be honest, between you and me and everybody listening, I think they're enjoying, you know, taking a little bit of time over this one and not feeling like they have to kind of rush, which is, you know, which is a great thing, I think.
Definitely. Oh, right. Getting back to Big Pharma, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Tim, regarding the actual, again, going back to the assembly line, we mentioned this earlier in the cast regarding some of the more advanced mechanics, the mixer, and the ability to basically alter the components of a cure. And this is definitely some of the more advanced stuff. How did you start developing and iterating on that kind of design?
Well, it all kind of comes from, as I've kind of touched on earlier, I always start with, what do I want to incentivize the player to do? What interesting activity do I want to incentivize the player to do? Which I think is has how I design games personally, especially strategy games. And so I wanted the player to have to, you know, think about what machines they were going to be putting in, and I wanted them there to be a level of experimentation. Mm-hmm. So the upgrading of the cures, you're kind of told what to do. Get it to this concentration, get this catalyst, and upgrade it. But I knew by adding something like the shaker and the multi-mixer, which lets you, for anybody who's not played it, lets you basically move effects, that's cures and side effects, between two drugs or mix them together. There's another one called the centrifuge, which allows you to swap them. Mm-hmm. By just putting in these kind of basic manipulator tools, I knew that it would really open the game up to lots of experimentation. You know, you could do things like mix multiple cures together and have them in a single drug, which actually has certain advantages if you can get two cures which upgrade at like the similar concentrations, because you can actually take them both up together without having to double up your machines, your production lines. There's stuff like that, which can be, you know, if you spent long enough, for God, you could probably optimize your production lines to like a ridiculous degree doing that sort of thing. And so, yeah, it kind of seemed pretty clear to me on that front how I could incentivize the player to experiment and look for new things. What else? There's the Hadron Collider, which allows, basically, it means that every single concentration requirement is automatically fulfilled. This is the most advanced machine in the game, so that every upgrade reaction can automatically go off as long as you have the machine available, and every effect is automatically active. So the problem is that includes your side effects. So it's kind of cool. Anyway, so yeah, I think, like I say, I always start with what I'm trying to incentivize the player to do, and then I try and think of ways to make them do that.
Mm-hmm. Another good one would be the creamer, and how can do with that is lower the strength level of whatever the side effect is. So if you're stuck with side effects that you can't get rid of, you can at least downplay their strength to hopefully keep them from activating when the pill goes to market.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now you've just made me think of a thing to add, which is, it's about synergy, right? We love synergy in strategy games. It's the reason we love collectible card games too. I don't know about you, I'm a big fan of collectible card games. So we love synergy because we have these two separate actions which are good on their own, but if we lay them across each other, there's synergy and you get a bonus of some kind, right? To get that sort of thing into the game, I had to think, especially with the research topics, I've aimed to have lots of things which have indirect consequences, which could be advantageous if you combo them with other things. Mm-hmm. So let me try and think of some examples of that. So, God, now I can't think of anything. I was trying to think, so the creamer, what's nice here is it's kind of like two options you almost have as soon as you add the creamer. You've got the option of trying to kill all of your side effects, so you don't even need the creamer, or you just keep the side effects around and then use the creamer. And then once you've done that, it's like, then you might be incentivized a little more to go for regulatory connections, which is a very advanced research topic, which just increases the cure rating of your cures to offset some of those negative side effects. I'm trying to think of other examples. Hopefully there's some in there, but that's definitely something I was trying to achieve in the later game, the kind of advanced, past the kind of production line simulation bit of the game, was, yeah, I was trying to look for opportunities to have different systems which kind of overlap in interesting ways.
Yeah. And one thing that you did was you separated the game into the beginner, intermediate, and advanced scenarios, and that also locks specific researches and locks specific machines.
That's correct.
The player. And that actually takes me to my next question for you, Tim, and that's regarding developing the actual content or the scenarios. As we said a few minutes ago, right now Big Pharma is predominantly about the scenarios and challenging the player to do either, you know, get X amount of money, produce these types of pills, and you said that you're going to hope to eventually add in a sandbox mode.
For sure.
Now, in terms of developing the scenarios, what was your approach to deciding, you know, what goals you wanted the player to achieve, and how did you separate things between, you know, beginner, intermediate, and advanced?
So the process for designing scenarios is funny, because the first thing I did was actually come up with a load of names. We were reaching the deadline on getting the beta trailer done, and so I wanted this awesome shot, well, I think it's awesome, of like panning across all of the scenarios and showing just, you know, this is all the stuff that's in the game. So within like an hour, I came up with all of these scenario names, kind of little puns and stuff, like based on different things, and that was my kind of overview of my different scenarios. And basically I broke those challenges down into, I guess, I don't know, a couple of groups. One of those groups is about giving the player a very vague target, which they can approach in a flexible way and approach in any way that they want. Mm-hmm. The other type of challenge is a specific challenge, which might be based on, say, a particular cure that the player is being asked to create and supply. And that challenge is doing something different. It's asking the player to do something quite specific, which if you're going for a certain cure, you're going to have to get certain machines, and it's about, you know, you're going to have to do this. So how can you kind of optimize your play around this route that you're going to have to take? Whereas the other one is just like wide open, make $5 million within X amount of time. So I wanted to have those two types of scenarios, partly because I think they work different bits of your brain. You approach them in slightly different ways. One of them is more like a time trial, I always think, like you're just kind of rushing to that one cure. And then the other one is more like just make loads and loads of money. I like both types of scenarios, but I'm aware that I think some people will be more into the more flexible sandboxy style scenarios, and other people might prefer the puzzly style scenarios where you're going for something specific. And I wanted to make sure both types of people were happy. In addition to all that, I had a thing on my thought like a minute ago, and then I was like, oh, what was it?
Don't worry about that. I've had those moments a lot on these guys. It's great, though, to be on the opposite end of for once, so I'm happy sitting here.
I know. No, don't worry. Yeah, I think that just about answers your question, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. All right. Before we move on and talk about the future, what you have planned for Big Pharma,
sure.
I do want to talk a little bit about some of my nitpicks I have with the game. I want to get your thoughts on them, and this will probably be a good springboard into what you have next or what you're going to plan for the next few months of development.
Sounds great. Hit me.
All right. The first one, we sort of talked about this earlier in terms of the management side of things, but one of the things I did run into, as you said, is at the moment, the game does feel like it gets a little bit repetitive once you've gotten like your groove down. Once you've set your machines up and you have a really good production line going, there doesn't seem to be like a late game, I guess. It feels like the game right now is predominantly focused on beginning, deciding what ingredients you want to use, getting the basic machines, and then the mid-game of upgrading the machines, getting the unlocks you want, and then going from there. For instance, I'm going to upload a video, at least at the time of this recording, in a few days, of me basically getting a level 4 cure, and then that was it. I didn't need to do anything else. I basically just put this level 4 cure down, and I was basically done. I actually spent like 5 minutes just watching the machines go, because there was really nothing else for me to do. So what I'm asking you about, Tim, is how are you going to approach, like, I guess, the late game? Like, how will that be different from what the player is doing when they first start out and when they actually start, you know, getting serious with mixing ingredients and getting like stage 3 and stage 4 cures out?
I think it's a very valid criticism to aim at the game, in fact. Yeah, I think it's the late game is probably the weakest part of it. I really love the early game.
Yeah.
And I love that excitement at the very beginning, and you've got hardly any money and that sort of thing. And then the mid game, like you say, you've actually characterized it very well. I think the mid game is fine. There is an evolution, you're upgrading. But yeah, that late game, I've got a couple of ideas. In fact, no, first I want to talk about the problems. Let's face up to them. So yeah, definitely one of the issues I seem to be getting is once you get to that level 4, maybe level 5 cure, you almost just have like loads of money at that point. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's loads of stuff you can still invest in, you see, because I assume you didn't get the Hadron Collider, and I assume you didn't get the sequencer?
I don't think so. Were they available on intermediate
level? Oh, no. Intermediate stops at Chromatograph and UV Cura. Okay, fair enough. In the advanced levels, you do actually have a couple more technologies. You've got extra machines. But the problem is, if you're not incentivized to get them, if you have everything you need to complete the challenge, then what's the point? So I think that's the first thing, is it might just be a slight, like a balance thing, is that you there needs to be a reason to kind of keep playing past level 4 or 5 cures. And so part of that is I'm going to actually tweak a load of the challenges to make it so that instead of them being like, you know, there's like a standard, like complete, expert and master rankings. Mm-hmm. So currently, they're based on time. Now, someone actually pointed out to me, the problem with this is it encourages the player to just basically churn out loads of level 2 and level 3 mm-hmm. cures, because that's all you can get access to in a few years. Yeah. And you know, it's possible to win these challenges in a few years based on that strategy. And what's annoying is that doesn't actually, all you're doing really is the early game and a little bit of the mid game, mm-hmm. but lots of it. And you're absolutely right, we need more late game, we need something different. So one way of changing that is we make that, instead of the it based on time, those extra ratings, it's based on magnitude. So instead of earn 5 million, so an advanced scenario is earn 5 million in, I think it's 12 years. So instead of do it in 6 years for master ranking, we do it in 12 years, but you've got to make $50 million, like 10 times as much. And I'm pretty sure that will make quite a big difference, because suddenly, yeah, you're making $1,000 a day on that cure, and that's great. But there is an extra layer of optimization that you need to do. You know, like the Hadron Collider does make it possible to make some ridiculous things. And so you will be incentivized to do that. That's one thing. I don't think that's quite enough yet, because traditionally in these management games, you actually have, you know, you've done lots of machine building, you've done lots of production line building. There's normally like an extra system that you get access to later in the game, which is a bit more macro oriented. And that's what I need to add to the game. Here is my current plan for that.
Okay.
So there's the system's called clinical trials. Okay. So clinical trials are it's a research that you get to unlock. And then when once you have access to it, you can run a trial on any product that you currently are selling. And basically, this trial is a little bit like what you get with the cure ratings already, but it's squeezed up into a much shorter time frame, and you pay a load of money to do it. And it has the if the trial goes well and the drug is shown to be effective and doesn't cause many side effects, then you'll get a boost to your cure rating, which will increase your revenues. Equally, if the results aren't so good, you'll get a negative hit to your revenues. Now, based on the research that you do, there'll be different kind of options for these trials, and you can kind of like exploit them in different directions depending on whether your drugs are good or bad, and yeah, you'll want to take different routes based on that. But that will certainly give you an extra kind of system to lay over the rest of your things. You know, you'll be thinking not just about the immediate value of this cure, but you know, by running clinical trials, can we add more later? Mm-hmm. So that's a good example, and I won't actually say any more now, because it's something else I wouldn't mind talking about, but maybe I'll talk about that a little later.
Okay. Yeah, it sort of sounds like what they were doing with Prison Architect in some of the recent alpha. I guess it's still considered an alpha, it's really hard to tell, when they added in the option of parole and rehabilitating prisoners. Like, your ultimate goal was, even though you have to keep these people, you should also try to keep them from reoffending, ending back in jail.
Interesting.
And they added that as sort of a late game thing. They also added in, they finally added in the death penalty, I heard, but they've made like very complicated and very hard and completely optional. But it did take them a really long time. I think it was like almost like 4 or 5 versions ago when they finally added in the parole system.
Yeah.
Because that's another good comparison between that and Big Pharma, was that they also had an issue where they were predominantly beginning and mid-game base, and they didn't really have that end game of, you know, what are you striving to do beyond just, you know, building your prison up?
Yeah.
Now, another thing that I want to touch on with you, Tim, are the competitors. Right now in the game, they really don't do much. I know, obviously, that's pretty much because the game is still very much in beta. But as the game continues to grow when you eventually release it, how much of a competition, how much of a challenge is the AI going to provide against the player?
So there's two things to mention here. So the first is, I actually just before release nerfed the AI quite heavily in beginner and intermediate scenarios, because I was just worried that it'd make new players and maybe people who aren't used to strategy games feel a bit insignificant compared to these AIs that are just kind of like churning out all of these things. Once you get to the advanced level, and certainly the one above that, the AI does pick up the pace rather a lot. And so I'd be interested to hear, if you just send me an email or something, I'd be interested to hear how you find them if you get to an advanced level, if you manage to get that far. But maybe the intermediate one needs to be a little bit tougher. Maybe the AI needs to be a little brighter in those stages. So that's one thing. But it's not just about how fast the AI works, it's also about how interactive the AI are and how interesting that interaction is. And I have a few ideas about what to do in that area. So one is just to kind of make the AIs a little bit more interesting in terms of their personalities. They already have different strategies in terms of what they go for, but I think there's a bit more I can do. They all follow reasonably the same strategy in terms of the way they choose which drug to make once they have access to it, even if they go for different machines. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do things like make Barkley, he's my favorite, go for like cheap drugs with side effects using the creamer. And then someone else who's a bit more experimental and uses, for example, none of the AIs ever use the auto tester. So they never even, or it's called the analyzer now. Yeah. They never even bother to find out max strength concentration. So it'd be interesting if they do that. And then the other thing is what can I do in terms of systems? So not just how clever the AI are, but systems. So one of my ideas is a patent system. So along with clinical trials, these are the two major systems that are missing outside of the gameplay. Inside the gameplay. So not including features such as free build and sandbox, but patents basically will allow the player and the AIs to lock out the competition from a certain cure for a certain number of years. And this, I'm hoping this coupled with an AI who's a little bit more aggressive and goes for different cures a little more aggressively, will make the player's time a lot harder. Because you imagine your AI jumps ahead, gets this ingredient before you have, and then just gets a patent on the level one cure before you're even able to. Okay. And suddenly that's a cure that you just can't even make.
Now, that actually brings up a question for you, Tim. How does that work when you're combining multiple cures? Like, let's say someone patents painkillers, and you create a drug that does both painkilling and cures insomnia. Does that basically block out all use of painkillers for X amount of years?
No, so the patent works based on composition. It doesn't work on concentration. I could have gone for that, but I decided it was too easy to get around a patent by just changing the concentration by one. So the way it works is whatever side effects and cures are active in that drug, regardless of the order they are in, that counts as a match. So you won't just patent painkillers, you'll patent, you know, 3 or 4 different products within your painkiller range if you want to. You could patent a cream and a sachet and a pill and also the painkiller that also has added antibiotics. And it's up to you how much you want to defend your intellectual property.
Okay, so it just works on, it basically takes like that blueprint of wherever you build, and then that is locked for 2 years. So if I want to so that can also throw into some things, like let's say he makes something that has 3 side effects in the cure, if I spend the extra time to remove one of those side effects, I could then still use like that painkiller, except instead of causing three things, it only causes two things.
Absolutely right. Okay. But of course, you're going to be, it's going to cost you a little money to remove it. And, you know, it might work out to your advantage, or maybe it'll work out to, you know, you'll make less profit than that person. So, yeah, it'll certainly add some interesting decisions.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question, this will probably lead more into talking about future stuff.
Sure.
Will there ever be, like, more, like, things on the management side, like advertising, more the business side of running the pharmaceutical company? Or is a game going to mainly focus on the assembly line and the construction of the various cures and drugs?
Yeah, so the example I gave earlier about clinical trials, that's about as macro as the game's going to get. And I haven't quite worked out exactly how that system's going to work down to, you know, every single nut and bolt. Mm-hmm. But I am certainly intending for it to be a kind of an interesting macro system. So it's a lot like an advertising system, but I thought it's a bit of a twist. Mm-hmm. It's not quite like you don't just pour money in and extra money comes out. It's you have to be, you know, careful with how many trials you run, you know, how many people you're going to have in each of those trials. You know, there's some extra decisions to make there. Okay. Sorry, what was the question was about
that kind of thing.
Sure. So that's the reason for that is kind of linking to I can't remember who it was, but one of the developers that you quoted earlier. The core game, the bit of the game that I think is really fun is the production line building. Yeah. And so I want to most of the new features that I want to add, I want to complement that production line building. And that doesn't mean that there's not more complicated and interesting things to do. It's just I want to focus them probably less on the commercial management stuff and more on the actual production lines. Let me give you an example. So there's two things I want to add, which I think will add some really interesting strategies. So one of those is a drug packer. This allows you to, it's a new machine. I've already got the assets for it. It's definitely going in the game. This isn't just me kind of like making stuff up on the spot. It's a machine which takes in up to 5 pills, depending on the upgrade level, or creams or syringes or whatever. It has to be finished products. And then once that number has gone in, a box comes out and it contains all of those pills. Oh. Creams, syringes. This box can't be pushed into any machines. It just won't go in, except it can be put into an export socket and sold instantly all of those items. Now, what this does is two things. It allows you to increase the export rate. You're no longer kind of being held, you know, to that kind of one pill every single turn. So it gives you a reason to have more production lines within one factory, if as long as you can get them all to merge together at the end into the one drug packer. And the other thing it does is it allows you to store finished products much more economically within your factory by just snaking around belts. So again, that's one feature. The other thing is I'm going to have two things maybe. Either an advanced belt, which allows you to set certain rules for which it's kind of like a splitter, which allows you to set certain rules for which drug go down which channel. And one of those will be based on price. And also, I think I'm going to have a minimum export price on a socket. Now, these things together allow you to build a bit more of a kind of automated monstrosity in your factory, where you have certain production lines that automatically stop when they're less profitable and then will start selling again when they're more profitable. And actually, by having the drug packer, which allows you to store resources and also export things much quicker when you want to, I think that actually opens up some really interesting strategies in terms of managing the marketplace and, you know, using the dips and troughs and selling when the price is high and not when it's low. Fingers crossed. I mean, these are all ideas and, you know, I have to see how it works in practice. But that hopefully will maybe scratch a bit more of that kind of commercial itch, a little bit more about market planning, less about building individual production lines, but it's still logistical, you know, it's still a logistical problem solved in your factory.
Okay, cool. Now, one last question that I want to ask before we move on talking about the future stuff.
Yeah.
And this is sort of, I guess, a nitpick, but also sort of an actual question as well. And
yeah, sure.
That is talking about the UI of Big Pharma. I found it in a lot of areas to be very streamlined, very easy to read. But then there are some areas that I felt like I kept having to switch back and forth between just having to keep myself up to date on. For instance, I would say, again, going back to the market side of things,
yeah.
I found that while I was looking at my production line, I kept forgetting to pay attention to, you know, what the current pricing is, what are the current number of people who are being affected by the cure, or how many people are still affected by the disease. And it felt like I had to just keep switching back and forth between these screens. And I guess sort of leading into the question, what was your approach to the UI design? Because this is another area that, hell, we could spend like 45 minutes on easily, talking about, you know, the intricacies of designing a UI. Because to me, it's definitely a very underrated element of game development.
Oh, for sure.
So, for you, how did you approach building this UI for Big Pharma, especially since you have these multiple screens of information?
Well, again, iteration. So I have thrown out entire screens. In fact, the vast majority of my iteration, I mentioned the belt tool and the production line concentration mechanic earlier. The majority of my iteration has been on the other tabs, actually. The company tab has been, three iterations. The research tab has been, I think, three. Cures tab has been two. Ingredients tab has been, like, five. In each time, only kind of, like, minimal things kind of like taken out and put back in. But what you see is actually the result of lots of iteration. It is a nightmare trying to expose such a lot of information to the player in a neat way that looks attractive, right? Like, it's really important for me. You probably can tell it's very important to me, the aesthetic look of the game. Yeah. I like everything being kind of flat panels and clear and just not too much text wherever possible. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is I like to hide a lot of my text in hovers and selections, and that does complicate the flow, no doubt. And it's a very tricky compromise to get the right balance on this kind of aesthetic appeal layout and whether information is hidden behind additional user interaction. And I would do things differently. I got to be honest, I would do things differently if I had my time again, but there's certain things that I am now stuck with and I have to just make the best of them.
Yeah, and I mean, all those are really challenging points, and not just with Big Pharma, but with any game we can talk about. I mean, I've tried to learn stuff like Europa Universalis, Crusader Kings, and my God, those UIs to like someone who's never touched those games. I mean, it's like trying to like learn a new language or trying to learn like advanced statistics or, you know, something you've never done. Yeah.
I agree.
I think that's one of the things that after this cast, I'll have to show you the video that I did with the multi-mixer insanity of trying to get that up. And I think one of the things that I think screwed me up or that I wasn't paying attention to was the pop-ups. I wasn't looking at whether the pop-up was telling me what was the evolution concentration level and what was the actual concentration level. I think that's what kind of messed me up. And actually, as a very quick aside question, not so much a tangent, in terms of UI, one thing that I was looking at was when you're looking at the various cure levels, tier 1, tier 2, and so on, it doesn't tell you what the concentration level of that next cure level is going to be. Like, let's say cure 1, concentration 3, and then when you go cure 2, it doesn't tell you on the page, you know, what that's going to go up to.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious decision to do that?
Yeah, it was. I actually used to show you that information, but it was just, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of a player who's just started. And I felt like it was just information overload, because imagine the very first tutorial. No, it's the second tutorial, actually, because it's disabled in the first. But you hover over that painkiller and it tells you to upgrade to Ease's Migraine. And then there's this extra whole box which tells you like another concentration. And rightly or wrongly, I decided that it was better to not overexpose information to the player, and you know, it probably is to the detriment of the seasoned pro who knows the difference but is really annoyed that they have to upgrade it and then wait to see what comes out. I do have a solution which I think should help, and it's not as quite as good as being able to see it when you hover, but by going to the cures tab, I'm going to make it so you can somehow access the concentration of any cure that you have already reached via that without having to go and find one in your factory. So that should allow you, at least when you're planning to do an upgrade, to kind of to know what to build next before you've actually made it.
All right, I mean, this has definitely been a great chat with you, Tim. I mean, I love talking about these types of optimization games. Before the cast, we talked about, you know, our love of Prison Architect, and I said I'm really enjoying Big Pharma because it's also scratching that itch.
But sure.
I know you're definitely busy. We're, of course, on two different times. So, I mean, what time is it where you are right now?
It's not too bad. I appreciate you meeting me at the, you know, at the, kind of in the afternoon at your end. It's just coming up to 9 o'clock here in the UK.
Oh, yeah. I've spoken with Chris Garner from Fail Better Games a few times, who's also in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also had that trouble of, you know, getting our time synchronized.
Oh, yeah.
But let's move on to our final topic then for this cast. But yeah, I would definitely love to have you back on because, I mean, we could definitely talk about so many more topics.
Sure.
And that is talking about the future of Big Pharma. At this current time of this recording, I believe Big Pharma's at version like 4.2, 4.3, or 4.1, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, so 4.1.05. I'm about to release 4.2 tomorrow morning.
Okay. So we've already talked a little bit about some of the ideas that you have for future content. You mentioned the Pill Packer. You talked about clinical trials as sort of a future late game thing. And you also mentioned a little bit about new conveyor belts or possibly having like new ways of controlling things.
Yeah.
In terms of like future content, besides those features, are there any other things that you sort of have in the back of your mind right now that you would like to add with future revisions of the beta?
To be honest, I think I've actually covered it. It's been great the way your questions have actually led to a lot of them. I think I've actually covered the vast majority of the big features. I'll talk a little bit more about what I'm calling advanced belts. I'm not sure if that's going to be the final name for it. Mm-hmm. But the idea of these is it's essentially a logic gate for your T-belts. And also there'll be crossroads eventually, I should mention. Because currently it's a massive... It's kind of like it's an interesting challenge, but you can never cross two production lines. It's kind of like Ghostbusters. God. You can't cross the lines.
Wait till you see some of the videos I put up. I've created like these massive snakes, like it's almost like Tetris.
Yeah.
One of my layer videos was just literally me spending like 15 minutes like, okay, I gotta put this here and let's move it up. No, it's going to cross with this one. Okay, let's move this over here. And one of my said, you know what, screw it, let's just take this whole section of the factory out and we'll redo it now.
Oh man, yeah, well hopefully the crossroad can kind of help a little bit with that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this advanced belt will allow you to add almost like if statements is the way I'll put it as a programmer. And you can say if combined value of drug is above this, go this way. If it's below that, go that way. If concentration is below this, go that way. If it's above this, go that way. And actually, that one's important. The concentration one, I haven't even added I can't even think of all the rest of them yet. I'm sure there's a lot of different parameters I could use. But yeah, the concentration one's clever because you can do my idea is almost like you could have like a machine bank where you could have like a load of agglomerators with T-junctions attaching to a line, and then you could send like loads of different drugs along this line, and they could just keep going around in a loop through an agglomerator until they reach the concentration that they need to get to. And you can just do that with these logic gates. And I think the incentive to do this is it can make your production lines more flexible. And if a price changes, you could go, well, I'm no longer going to make antihistamines, I'm going to switch over to antibiotics with just by changing one of these gates. That's my thought. So I haven't even worked out all the ways this can be used yet, but I think it's one of those tools that if you give the community, they'll just go crazy with it and make some like ridiculous contraptions.
Yeah, that definitely sounds a lot like what I saw with like Infinifactory and like Space Chem, with having these tools that it, as you said, it can let you just keep working and iterating on one thing instead of having to make one really long line. As you said, you can just create a loop. And that kind of, when you get to that level of thinking, that's when things can get really crazy. I mean, I saw people play like Infinifactory or even Space Chem. What happens when things get that complicated? It's just insane what they can start to come up with.
Totally. I think the only other thing, only other feature is approval ratings. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things that's missing from the games, certainly in the late game, is an extra incentive, a more interesting incentive Or divergence, actually, let's call it, between whether you make good cures or bad cures or something in the middle. Because at the moment, all it is a worse cure will just have a lower cure rating and won't make as much money. And you're kind of just balancing that against the cost. But what if there was actually something else you were balancing it against, an approval rating, which changed slowly over time, depending on how good the drugs you are making, but also which drugs you are making. So just imagine this scenario. I'm going to actually massively nerf the values of the AIDS cure, the HIV vaccine, the tuberculosis cure, and the malaria cure. So that they are much, much harder to make a profit on. In fact, they're almost, you can only just break even by making those unless you're very, very good and you have really upgraded machines. But because these are things that affect so many people in the world, and you know, they're things that we all attach a lot of kind of emotion to, if you do go ahead and cure these things, you should get a higher approval rating. So just by curing, you don't even have to be getting a good cure rating, but just by curing malaria, you'll slowly have a higher cure rating. And if you manage to like wipe it out, then you get like a massive bonus. And that's, approval rating. And that approval rating will then kind of feed back into the game in some interesting ways. I think the most interesting example I've got at the moment, although I'm sure I could think of some new ones over time, is if your approval rating gets too low, a bunch of protesters might picket your ports, and like your seaports, allowing you to import your ingredients. And so the game reaction of that will be one of your ingredients will be just locked out for a year, 6 months. Can you imagine that? Like, you've played the game. Yeah. Imagine it's your ingredient, which has got your level 2 catalyst that you're using in 5 different cures, and suddenly you can't import it anymore. You either have to rush to get a new catalyst as quick as you can, or you just have to cannibalize those production lines and just see what else you can make with them. And I think things like that should make the game a little bit more interesting, I want it to be a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more like exciting, because at the moment, generally speaking, once you're set up, not much can really touch you. So
yeah. And will there be any more greater functionality with the explorers and the scientists in later versions? Because one of the things I saw, again, once I got to that point of sustainability, I just said, you know what, I don't need my science explorers anymore. I just can them all, and I just collected the daily maintenance back from them.
I'm not sure, to be honest. No, I think personally I'm happy with the role that those play, and I think that's a decision that that's a totally valid decision for you to make. Can your workforce, because workforce is really expensive. I deliberately make workforce really expensive in the game. But you know, bear in mind that you're not going to make much progress after that point. So what happens if then some AI comes muscling in your territory, or you've got a bad approval rating and a gets thrown in the works? So I think actually, instead of making those systems more interesting in themselves, what I could just do is, almost by adding other systems that throw more spanners in the works, I think that will incentivize players to be a little more careful. You know, they might, you know, you maybe you will fire your workers, but then if you end up having to hire them all again, that's going to cost you quite a lot.
We've already talked a lot about future content as it is, so I'm trying to think if there's anything else to ask. You already mentioned the pill packer. Any other like teasers or hints about more machines coming down the line?
No pun intended. No, I don't think so. No, I think that's actually going to be it for the machines. I'm mainly concentrating on things that make the existing gameplay more exciting and dynamic.
Okay. All right, then I think with that, my final set of questions are going to be, you know, the boring logistic management type questions in for you, Tim.
Sure. Well, I love those. I made a game about them, so.
Yeah. All right, so the big one, obviously, for people listening, as of this recording, Big Pharma is only available from the Twice Circle site.
Yep.
Do you have a time frame for when you're hoping to get it on Steam?
Yeah, so I'm being quite vague deliberately because I actually made a mistake almost saying things too early and got some people too excited about the beta, and I held it back for like another 2 months. So I don't want to do that again. Yeah. So, you know, later in 2015 is what I'm saying. You know, let's just say it's more likely to be autumn than winter.
Okay.
If you live in the Northern Hemisphere anyway. if you're equatorial, then I don't know how to describe it. In kind of quarter 3/4. Basically.
Okay. Now, when it does go on Steam, is that going to be the retail version, or will that be the early access version?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. I don't get asked that very much, and I actually forget to mention that will be the full retail version. Okay. I don't see any point of putting the early access version on Steam. I think it will be too short a time period to really get much benefit from it. And honestly, when I hopefully, fingers crossed, explode onto the Steam pages, I want my best work to be on show, and I just want it to be the polished game. I want to be hitting up Mac and Linux version, because currently it's Windows only. I want to be putting out a German version, a Polish version, a French version, you know, different languages, modding support. You know, I want all these things to be in place so that when it hits Steam, it's just like, this is the package, there's no reason to wait. And I'm in the lucky position that I've worked hard to put myself in a position where I don't need to do another release on Steam to kind of earn enough to cover the development costs. Like, I'm covered up until Steam release. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's interesting that you said about putting it on Steam in the best version. So you're going to skip early access on Steam.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very interesting topic. I don't want, you know, spend 3 minutes on it. I mean, just to briefly talk about that, we've had very polarizing opinions on early access. I've talked to other developers who they hate the idea of putting an unfinished game on Steam. And when I spoke with Zach Barth from Zachtronics, we of course mentioned Infinite Factory and Space Camp.
Yeah,
he talked about how he's really come around to early access.
Interesting.
His last game, Infinite Factory, was their first early access. They just released one, TIS, like a programming game, on early access, and he's been using it. Yeah, he's really come around to basically getting in front of these eyes and basically working on the game while still being sold. But it's definitely a very interesting, and both ways have their pros and cons, as we've seen. As you just said, Tim, when you go on early access, you are putting, you know, your worst version of the game in front of all your customers, and you know, they run into problems that can come back to bite you when it's time to fully release it. Or, you know, if you're promising this, this, and this, and that doesn't happen, you know, you're going to have a lot of people who are annoyed. And then on the other side, if you do the early access, it really can help you, as you said, with having an enclosed beta on your site.
Yeah, yeah.
You get tons of free testers. You get all these eyes on the game who are going to pick apart every little detail, but that's good because it lets you, as you said over this cast, iterate on your design.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the reason we decided to go with, you know, you've basically just given some pros and some cons. And that's why we've decided to go for this kind of halfway house of we're doing early access, but we're just not doing it on Steam. Because I think it kind of gives you the best of both worlds, or at least it gives you a mitigated version halfway between. So luckily there's been a big kind of, I think, hoo-ha around Big Pharma, or, you know, bigger than I was expecting, honestly. The game's got more attention than I was expecting, if I'm honest. And I've actually managed to get a really decent number of people playing the game at this stage, and I think I've got plenty of feedback and plenty of playtesters. So I've kind of got that aspect of the game without having to go on Steam. And then on the other front, I'm the great thing about not being on Steam for early access, I think, is you're kind of in your own place. So, you know, we've got our own forums. We can kind of moderate our own kind of area, and it's kind of a safe place to kind of to have a game which is not finished yet and that has bugs and all this sort of stuff. The problem with early access I've seen is I have seen games that come out, and they've probably come out too early. So, you know, first up, there is a fault with the developer there. They've probably released it too early. Maybe they've run out of money, and the game's been slated because it's full of bugs, and they really shouldn't have put it out. But the problem is that I worry that sticks with a game, because Steam has a really great storefront full of user reviews, critic reviews. You can just recommend a game up and down, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, and those sort of statistics. I'm sure they're deteriorated over time, but they decayed, that's the word I was looking at, decayed over time, but I'm sure they still have some kind of permanent thing. So in a purely selfish business sense, I would be really worried to put out a half-finished game on Steam and run the risk of a permanent set of reviews that say we hate this game because it's buggy or not fun. Whereas, if I have a load of things on my forum which say that, let's face it, most people who are going to buy the game on Steam in a couple of months, they're probably not going to root around in my forums. Yeah. They're very welcome to, but there is a level of protection there if you do by accident release a game that's not ready. So that's my take on it. It sounds a little bit, I don't know. So I'm not trying to hide my game's flaws from people, honestly. It's just, I think on Steam, you've got to be a little bit careful about making those flaws too obvious.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing that with a lot of city builder or match style games on the platform as it is, like Starbound, Stonehearth. Hell, even, of course, Prison Architect. I know there's still people who are complaining, why isn't this game out yet? What are you taking so long for? And so on. And we talked about this before the cast, but in terms of, as we were talking about with like updating the game and iterating with each new version, when you get on early access, it really becomes a lot more demanding because people are expecting, a very high quality of support. Why haven't you updated this game in 3 weeks? Did you quit on the game? Types of questions. Yeah.
That's it. And I think there's something to be said for, it's not just the number of people, but also the quality of people. And sounds a little bit kind of harsh, but I think the type of person who is going to take the plunge and buy directly from a developer on my website, come to my forums to post. This is a very old school way of doing it. This is what people did a few years ago. that type of person is probably a kind of realistic person. They understand the risks of buying an early access game. They understand that it might be buggy and this sort of thing. And they're more understanding. I've got very little. In fact, I don't think I've had a single comment somewhere that I've seen which has just said this game is shit, I hate it, I want a refund. I think we've given a few refunds back to people who bought it thinking it was available on Mac and it's not, so we gave a refund. Get back to my point. I think there's definitely a chance on Steam it being so ubiquitous, 60, probably 70 million people now on Steam or worldwide. There's probably people who don't understand what early access really means and might not, even though it has the disclaimer, might buy a game expecting a finished product and then rant about it because who's going to stop them? And that is a risk that I wasn't willing to take.
Yeah, and talking about that, that's a really good comparison with Prison Architect. I know with Introversion, when they first set the game up, they explicitly priced it really high and only had it on their own site because they didn't want, someone just coming in and just wanting to play a finished version to look at their game. And, I mean, pricing and that type of expectations, that's another good 40-minute discussion. I mean, we have so many examples we could talk about that.
God, yeah.
All right. I guess my last question, at least where I can think of off the top of my head, is after Big Pharma is released sometime in 2015, do you have any plans for future support or future content? This is another one of those big things that we have different developers have different tastes on.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So there's definitely, based on the response and the number of sales I've had for Big Pharma so far, I definitely think it is a game that I would be happy to revisit in future and perhaps do a sequel or expansions. I think, I'm leaning more towards the expansions. I don't want to kind of scare people off and think that's it, the game's going to come out and then we're never going to touch it. Obviously there's right now I'm focusing on just getting the basic game, done. And that's, Drug Packer, Advanced Belts, probably no more machines after that, but a load of other features. And then, in the future, what I'm going to do is, wait and see what players kind of think's missing, and then see if there's an area that I could do like a bolt-on expansion, which adds, new systems, new machines, new modes, big things like that. I mean, you're probably looking for examples. I think the one example I would give, but with absolutely no promise that this will happen. Loads of people are excited by the idea of like an evil version of Big Pharma, if it's not evil enough. So like an illegal version where you, instead of having dissolvers that look kind of like clean and like things that appear in factories, it's like you have this little underground basement and you've got like these counters with conical flasks and pipettes and titration things. And it's like, it's Breaking Bad, basically.
I was about to say that too.
And people would really like to see something like that.
Has anyone brought up, you know, making like the zombie play or the zombie thing? Because I know that's got to be something someone has to have suggested by now.
Yeah, well, I mean, me and my artists have been chatting about the idea of like a themed scenario around like the T-virus almost. Like, you know, so the zombie virus, and that you're actually fighting to get rid of it. But yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it would actually work.
Yeah. All right. I think with that, I am just about out of questions, at least, you know, to keep this cast from going over like 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
But, for you, Tim, are there any other parts of developing the game that I haven't mentioned yet that you want to bring up before we start to wrap things up?
No, I think I've probably spoken long enough about Big Pharma for all of your listeners.
Awesome. All right. Again, Tim, it has been an absolute pleasure. Like I've said, I think this has become a common thing with all these casts. I mean, I could just sit here and chat with you for like the next 2-3 hours easily.
Sure.
There's just so much to talk about, especially with game development. But yeah, like we said, you are about like five or six hours, I think, ahead of me now. So I think we better wrap things up. I don't want to keep you into the morning, your time.
Sure.
So my final question for you, Tim, for this cast, do you have any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say to the fans listening to the cast?
Oh, gosh, I wasn't expecting that. I don't know, really. I think, you know, if there's anybody who's kind of remembers old school games, like, you know, we talked about Theme Hospital, Theme Park, Roller Coaster Tycoon, Transport Tycoon, and fancy something similar, but maybe brought up to date a little bit with some of the kind of new gameplay designs that we've kind of come up with over the last few years in terms of kind of really tight core loops and really like satisfying progression, and we'd like to try something like that, then, you know, come over and give Big Pharma a try. There's tons of videos out there. If you want more information, you want to like see how the game plays before you buy it. There's like a number of high profile streamers who've covered it. You can even come to the Twice Circled website and check out my vlogs. And in fact, actually, if there's anybody listening who ends up buying the game, I definitely would encourage people to either follow me on Twitter or sign up to the Twice Circled newsletter. In fact, the newsletter is my favorite because that's quite a permanent thing you can do. Obviously, you can unsubscribe at any moment, but so it's a monthly newsletter, no more frequent than that. And it's not just attached to Big Pharma, but it's also a way that you can hear about my future games. You know, in maybe 2-3 years, who knows? If you like the sort of stuff that I do, then that's just a way to kind of keep in touch. Yeah, thanks for listening, and I hope you like the sound of the game.
Awesome. All right. With that, we're going to end things here for this episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Again, Tim, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. Like I said at the beginning of this cast, I really do enjoy Big Pharma. Again, I love these types of management style games, and it really does scratch that itch. And yeah, I can't wait to see how things really wrap up later this year.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me, Josh.
Awesome. And for those of you listening here, we're going to end things for the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you would like to support Game Wisdom, we have several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. To contribute to our ongoing Patreon campaign to secure some very much needed monthly funding to keep all this going, you can find me on Patreon under Josh Beister or Game Wisdom, or by clicking on the little Patreon banner on the front of the page as well. Any donation would be greatly appreciated. And, of course, if you like to watch my daily plays of video games, including plays of Big Pharma and a variety of other titles, you can find me on Twitch under GW Beiser, and I'm usually streaming around 10 Eastern most nights, and all the videos will get uploaded to the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. So, again, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you next time. Take care, everybody.